Now, in our culture, we use that word a lot. We use it to describe our understanding of who we are. Identity is our internal measure of value, our sense of belonging, and our feeling of purpose, all wrapped into one. Now, the problem for all of us is since we are sinful people living in a sinful world, our identity is broken. We often don't feel valuable. We don't feel like we belong. And our lives feel like they are often without purpose. And none of us are comfortable with this. And so we try to figure out how to solve it. How to connect who we are and who we should be, or who we are with who we want to be. Now, there's all sorts of solutions offered to us in this life, ways to feel more valuable, places to go for belonging, ways to create meaning for yourself. And it's easy for us to buy into all of these because we want so badly to heal our broken identities. But what I want to do today is show you the answer that we are given in Scripture. How finding our identity in Jesus leads us to true freedom. So let's get into it. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, starting in verse 1, it says this. It says, "This is how one should regard us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found faithful." So Paul begins here by revealing the identity that we have is in relation to God. We are not partners in the plan of God, we're servants. We do not carry value and purpose in ourselves, we are stewards. In other words, what Paul is saying is that we are identified by our relationship to God. Our belonging is found in understanding that we are creation and He is creator. With that, God has created us with value for purpose and to belong to Him. And so all of the brokenness that we experience in this life, all of the gaps that we find in our identity, come through our separation from Him. Moreover, he says, and that word means in addition to, right? Moreover, we are not only servants, but we are required, he says, to be found faithful. Not found trying, not found with good intentions, found faithful. Faithfully living a life that reflects the glory of God. That is an absolutely frightening statement because each one of us knows that we are not faithful. When we hear that we need to be found faithful and we know that we are not faithful, that's a discouraging reality. In some ways, it sounds like every other part of our life, you're not good enough. Once again, you are a failure. And this fear of being rejected, of not measuring up, that is alive and well in every human being. We all want to be told that we are doing a good job. We all want to hear, well done. But most of us don't feel like we're doing a very good job. This makes us fragile and insecure. Let me show you a couple of ways that this plays out in our lives. This is why we have daddy issues. Right? The root cause of many societal problems and identity issues comes from broken relationships with our parents, specifically our dads. Kids feel like the love from their parents needs to be earned and re-earned, and parents don't know how to show love properly. And so we end up with all sorts of counseling bills that stem from a broken sense of ourselves and our identity, simply because we don't feel valued in the ways that we desire. It's also why we have marriage problems, right? When two people get married to one another, they enter into one of the most defining relationships in their lives. The problem is, this relationship can not only help to reform and shape you, it can also destroy you. I've sat down with enough couples where the main problem is he doesn't know how to love her in a way that she feels like she's doing well as a wife, and she doesn't know how to respect her husband so that he feels like he is succeeding at what he is doing. And so you put two insecure people reverting to other means to define themselves together, and it's usually not going to end very well. all because we don't get the sense of belonging that we crave. This is why we struggle with our jobs. Right? For most people, your job is where you're supposed to put your mark on this world, or you're supposed to get a great deal of hide for us in the way that we think it should. Our work is hard, and our bosses don't like us. Or if you are the boss, you aren't respected by the people who work for you. They don't understand what it's like to do your job. In the end, our jobs don't provide the purpose we need. Or let me actually even go the other way. Maybe you do achieve. Maybe your life is nothing but success upon success upon success. But then your whole life just becomes trying to maintain it. One of the saddest things I think to watch is athletes at the end of their playing career. They can't quit. They keep trying to regain what they had before. They have for many years found their identity in what they can do, and all of a sudden they can't do it anymore. But they can't let go because they know that there isn't anything else in this life that will ever give them the rush of 50,000 adoring fans. As it all comes to a close, so does their sense of power. See, all of these issues stem from the same thing, even though they seem to be opposite on the surface. Becoming a slave to success or becoming a failure in relation to success are both symptoms of the same root problem, and that is a fragile ego. What Paul is about to do here in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, then, is drop an absolute bomb when it comes to how we think about who we are. This is what he says in verse 3. He says, "But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by any human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself. For I am not aware of anything against myself, but I am not thereby acquitted. It is the Lord who judges me." Paul here is well aware of the need that we all have to be validated. That's what he means by the word judged. Paul is also aware at how we try to solve this issue. Right? We end up feeling worthless and insecure, and or we get prideful and think we're better than everyone else. And I think if we're honest with ourselves as we go through this life, we're at different parts of that spectrum at different times. Right? One moment we think we're better than everyone else, and the next we're trying to pick ourselves up off the floor because we feel so terrible about who we are. As human beings, we're a mess. But what we do, no matter where we are on this spectrum at the current moment, is we try to repair the situation through our own means. Let's take the situations we talked about earlier. Daddy issues. Right? We said there's this deep desire in us to be honored by our parents. And if we feel like we didn't get the response we wanted, we try to overcome the deficiencies. We become overly concerned with the things that our parents would have judged us on, or we go looking for validation that we never got from them. We try to find the relationships that are going to give us the value and the love that we feel like we missed out on. Marriage. When we don't feel like our marriage is giving us the feelings of love and respect that we want it to, we often retreat into self-obsessive behaviors. We decide that we're not getting the belonging that we think we deserve, and so we go trying to find that belonging on our own, and we turn to easier alternatives, pornography, affairs, romance novels, soap operas, blah, 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 all that stuff. We are looking to cheap substitutes that we can use to feel good about ourselves. And then when in relation to our jobs, we either can become workaholics, where we're trying to get out of work something it cannot provide, but we think, if I just try harder, maybe I can get there. Or the new variation that's gaining traction, where people are giving up on work entirely. Just going, work, it just takes away from the actual things that matter in this life, and so they're not going to put any sense into that because it just doesn't give them what they think should. Now, I don't want to downplay any of these struggles or pretend like there's some easy solution for the complex problems of personal identity. I don't want you to think that these very natural conditions of being human are easy to fix. Instead, what I want to do is show you an entirely different way of going about it. See, when Paul says it's a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by any in court, he's saying more than just, I don't care what you think. Paul has identified that the struggle of ego is deeply rooted in what other people think of us. And a good portion of the things that we do on any given day are done because we're trying to impress other people or not let someone down. And so Paul is making it clear to the Corinthian church that they have little to no impact on how he validates himself. Now, if someone said that to us, right? I don't really even care what you think. We would think, man, that person is self-assured. We would say, the reason why that person doesn't care is because they found some sort of secret to self-fulfillment. Paul answers that thought by saying, I do not even judge myself. What Paul is saying here that is huge. We tend to think that the greatest problem of people is they're not self-confident enough. That if they believed in themselves, then they could accomplish anything. If they were sure of themselves, then the opinion of others wouldn't matter. That if we were all self-aware thinking adults, then we would all be well-adjusted and the world would be a wonderful place. But what this way of thinking presupposes is first that we have an accurate view of ourselves, and second that somehow knowing ourselves would solve the problem. Paul shoots down this first assumption when he says, I am not aware of anything against myself, but I am not thereby acquitted. What Paul is saying is, I know that my assessment of myself is not accurate. He's saying, even if my conscience is clear, even if I think that I am doing well, it's not my judgment that matters. Why? Because he is not the one who validates. He says, it is the Lord who judges me. Which means whether or not we think we are okay is not what matters. What matters is what God thinks. And if the identity that we receive from him is what gives us value and belonging and purpose, then we don't go looking to others for this and we don't look for it in ourselves. Now this brings us back to where we started. After all the attempts in this life that we have made to find worth and validation, all the ways that we have tried to find this in other people or find it within ourselves, our sense of identity ultimately comes down to our relationship with our Creator. No matter how much respect we have from other people, no matter how self-aware we are, He requires that we be found faithful. So this puts us in a predicament. He requires that we be found faithful. We know that we are not faithful. We're in trouble. But this is a sermon about freedom, so there has to be something more here. How do we find absolute freedom in a scenario in which we can't achieve what we need? We can't redefine it for ourselves, and we can't just ignore it and hope that it goes away. Well, if God were like all other relationships, then he would look upon us and find us lacking. He would allow us to receive the punishment that we absolutely deserve. The good news then is that God is not like us. Ephesians 2, 4 through 7 tells us, but God, being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus, so that in the coming ages he might show the immeasurable riches of his grace and kindness towards us in Christ Jesus. And so as we die with Christ and are raised with him, we are made new. We're brought from death to life. Part of this newness is that our sin is taken away. The things that we have done, the things that we continue to do, they are taken off of our shoulders. They've all been paid for in the death of Jesus Christ. And then in coming back from death, we are raised with Christ and seated with him in the heavenly places. And in this new birth, the guilt, the insecurity, the feelings that I am not good enough, that part of us dies as we are brought back into relationship with God, where he looks upon us and he sees us as faithful. He looks at us and he calls us his sons and his daughters. Now, this isn't because we are good and faithful. It's not because of anything that we have done. It's because of what has been done on our behalf. And what this means is that if you are a Christian, you no longer have to worry about judgment. God is using us to show the world the immeasurable riches of his grace and kindness. We are tools in the plan of God. And how does he use us? He pours out his love and his grace on us to show us and the world how loving and great and gracious he is. So what does all of this mean for freedom? Well, this is what Paul says in verse 5. He says, "Therefore, do not pronounce judgment before the time, before the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. Then each one will receive his commendation from God." So here's another one of those key words, therefore. The point Paul is making is because God is the judge and he has declared us faithful in Jesus Christ, it follows then that we do not have to spend our time proving ourselves or trying to hold other people up to some standard that we have created. The things of this life that overwhelm and destroy us lose the power to do that. We are free. What are we free from? Well, first, we are free from the burden to make something of ourselves. Right? This want that we have to impress other people, this selfish desire to achieve, it affects every waking moment of our lives. And what the gospel says to us is, it is finished. Your identity has already been earned and gifted to you. That frees up a lot of time and energy. Right? How many waking hours do you devote to trying to appease yourself, other people, some idea of what God expects of you? The gospel says, you can stop. This one hits home for me. I've wasted a lot of my life doing things to build an image of myself. I say yes to all sorts of things to make other people like me and to make me feel better about myself. And in the end, I just end up doing all sorts of things that make me frantically busy and unable to enjoy God and others. I allow good things that I am using to define my reputation to distract me from the joyful things that God has given me. And not only does this rob me of joy, it's working against the very validation that I strive for. Jesus says it this way in Matthew 11. He says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." That is freedom. Not to make something of ourselves, but to live out of the identity that we have already received. Now, this also frees us from the torment of fear and worry. See, one of the things that our ego does is it makes us defensive and aggressive. It's because we're afraid that we might lose what we have worked so hard to get. But the gospel tells us that everything that we have has been given to us by God. It is held in place by him. So it cannot be lost. People can try to wreck your reputation, but it will not affect your validation. People can use and abuse you, but you're still going to receive the inheritance that has been purchased for you. Even death has no ability to take away our joy. So as people who have been seen completely and been declared faithful, we no longer have to suppress the truth of who we are. We no longer have to hide. We no longer have to build a facade. We can admit struggle. We can ask forgiveness before we get caught. We can hear criticism and not be destroyed. Because it shouldn't be a surprise to any of us that we have problems. But our limitations and our weaknesses no longer define us. They're merely the reality of being human. And so finding our identity in Jesus means that we do not have to pretend or perform. We can stare directly at our failings and see the grace of God. Rather than being tormented by fear and worry, we can find gratitude in the fact that in spite of our inability, Jesus has stamped his identity on us. Which also frees us then from having to find our meaning in this world. We all want to heal our broken identity. We want to be fulfilled. And so we look around for the things that this world offers us. We try to find ultimate in things that are temporary. And as we've seen in our lives, they never give back what they promise. The job or the promotion that we chase is exciting for as long as we can brag about it, but then it fades. Men, you get the girl and then you have her and you don't know what to do with her. Women, you find Prince Charming only to find out that life is not happily ever after. The experience that was supposed to be amazing and make your life just great leaves you wanting more. It's like King Solomon at the end of his life, a very eventful life, muttering, meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless. But it doesn't have to be. Being raised with Christ frees us to a meaning that exists beyond the world that we see. It allows us to live in the reality of validation that will come when we stand before God and he says to us, "Well done, good and faithful servant." But in order to receive this freedom, in order to be sure that we are united with the life of Christ, we need to look at the cross as the only hope that we have to avoid our deserved punishment. And we need to look at the resurrection of Jesus as the only hope for joy and fulfillment in this life. Jesus is alive and we get to live forever in his wonderful presence because of his loving mercy shown to us. We get to live this life then free from trying to make something of ourselves or hoping that this world can give us something because both we and this world are broken. We have been freed from allowing our circumstances to define us. We have been freed from having to look in a mirror, staring at our flaws and letting it drive us to despair. Now, this doesn't mean that it doesn't matter what you do, but simply that your value, your belonging, and your purpose are not based on your merits. You can live with the freedom of knowing that you are not at the center of your identity. And because you are not the center, your life can now become about living with and for God. The Christian life doesn't change your earthly circumstances. It doesn't fix all your flaws. What it does is it repairs your relationship with God and allows you to live freely in the way that you were created to. I love how Paul puts this in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. When he says, "But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. We are afflicted in every way but not crushed, perplexed but not driven to despair, persecuted but not forsaken, struck down but not destroyed, always carrying in the body the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our bodies. For we who live are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our mortal flesh." God has given us value, belonging, and purpose, but we continue to hold it in this broken body, in this broken world. And so this is our struggle. We have been given a perfect identity, and yet we continue to fight against it. We have been given freedom, and yet we continue to submit to a yoke of slavery. This is in itself what it means to be human. We cannot fully grasp the gift that we have been given. And so we keep looking for something other than God. We keep looking to be fulfilled by something other than what Jesus offers. Which is why God has given us ways to be reminded of what he is offering. And as we come together every week, we practice one of these reminders in communion. And as we come to the table, we take the bread and the cup. We are acknowledging that Jesus offers us what we lack on our own. And as we partake, we unify ourselves to him. We connect ourselves to his life. We place the burden of identity on him so that we can take up the life of freedom. And even though we don't feel or experience this freedom right now, this action is a reminder to us that because our validation is based on Jesus' work, we can be sure, no matter how you feel about yourself, no matter what others say about you, you have value, belong, and your life has purpose. And so as you come to the table today, come to be reminded. Come to be reminded that all of the voices in this world, including your own, that are declaring you not good enough, do not have the power of the one that says, "You are mine." Let's pray.